We'll hear argument next in number 19-2372, Proof Farm, Inc. v. Wichita Laboratories Limited. Mr. Ricciuti.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, Christopher Ricciuti on behalf of the appellant, Proof Farm. This appeal stems from two IPRs filed by appellant where the board's patentability conclusion rested on two fundamental errors. The first regarding the board's assessment of the scope and content of the prior art, and the second regarding the board's application of the reasonable expectation of success analysis.
Mr. Ricciuti,
yes.
Before you get into the merits of the appeal, could I ask you to focus for a second on standing and tell us your standing arguments?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. And that is exactly where I wanted to go first. There is the threshold issue regarding appellate standing, and so I think it is appropriate to start there. On that issue, in view of the party's 10-year negotiation history, WISTA's refusal to license these patents to Proof Farm, and Proof Farm's ongoing methylene blue commercial activity, Proof Farm has standing to appeal. WISTA's position, contrary to that, is based on two faulty...
Why is your commercial activity potentially infringing? As I understand it, under the NDA, it only calls for 97% purity rather than 98% purity. And I don't see how compliance with the NDA creates infringement or a risk of infringement.
Yes, Judge Dyke. So the FDA's methylene blue monograph requires the purity for compliant methylene blue API to be at least 97% pure, and the claims require 98% pure. But if I would refer the panel to Appendix 6612 at paragraph 18, that's the declaration from Mr. Newman in this case of Proof Farm. He states there that the target purity of Proof Farm's methylene blue API has to exceed 97% to be compliant with the FDA standard. So certainly Proof Farm goes above 97% in order to ultimately make methylene blue API.
Well, counsel, doesn't Mr. Newman go further than that? He points to the 942 and the 850 patents, which he explains cover the method by which you, in fact, make your product, and that both of those say that the method being used produces a degree of purity greater than 97%, preferably greater than 98%, or even better than 99%. So don't we know from Mr. Newman's declaration that the very process you used, which is detailed in two separate patents, produces a purity higher than 97%, and preferably higher than 98 or 99%, and doesn't that, you know, meet in your mind the minimum threshold for standing? I mean, I guess it would be hard for me to say, go ahead, you have to admit you infringe in order to have standing. That's the hard thing. You're between a rock and a hard place on that one.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I think that's exactly right. You know, there is no requirement to admit to infringement. Recently, I would point the panel to the court's decision in Mayborn v. ITC, which is 965 F3rd 1350, where a potentially infringing a patent in question was enough to confer appellate standing from an ITC general exclusion order. And we think the analysis should be the same here for the point that, exactly that you raise. We certainly know that Proof Farm's process is capable of making API that exceeds 97%. The facts are not in the declaration as to, you know, in the exact real-world commercial embodiment, what that percentage gets up to, whether it's exactly consistent with the patents or not. But that's exactly our point, is that we have a process where the overall methylene blue purity is going to be greater than 97%, so very close at minimum to the claimed 98% purity. In order to meet the FDA monograph.
Tell me again, how do we know that it approaches 98%?
What Mr. Newman said in paragraph 18 is that their process has to exceed...
Which page?
APPX 6612 at paragraph 18.
Well, counsel, to be clear, what I was referring you to is at 6613, paragraph 20, where he explains how your process is actually created by the process described in the 942 and 850 patent. And that patent suggests a higher concentration than even his prior paragraph.
Thank you, Judge Moore. Absolutely, it does. And you know, that is consistent with the prior paragraph in paragraph 18. My only, I guess, point there was in Mr. Newman's declaration, you know, he hasn't stated exactly, you know, how the patent correlates to the real-world ultimate percentage purity of methylene blue API. And so certainly I think the process is capable of exceeding 97%.
Counsel, the process can't be capable of exceeding 90%. According to your patent, it has to exceed 97%. You have two patents, the 942 and 850. You say that your commercial product is made by the process articulated in those two patents. Those two patents don't cover something that might exceed 97%. They require it to exceed 97%. What am I missing?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
But what evidence did you submit that the differences, and it's more than just the methylene blue purity level, but there are other gaps that between the FDA requirements and the claims of the patent at issue. So what evidence did you submit that objectively those differences are really meaningless?
This is Judge O'Malley, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. So
I know. We all sound alike.
when you look at the FDA's requirement, the ASR A and C limits, when you meet the FDA requirement, you're necessarily going to meet the claimed requirements for those impurities. So the two impurities that we believe are potentially relevant in terms of potential gaps for standing relate to ASR B and MVB. The claims say for ASR B less than or equal to 1%, the FDA requirement is less than or equal to 2.5, and then for MVB, the claims say less than or equal to 0.05%, the FDA requirement is less than or equal to 0.1%. And so it's ProPharm's position that, you know, we're looking at standing here and not the ultimate infringement merits, and it may be the fact that ProPharm's requirement, while compliant with the FDA monograph, may not ultimately infringe the ASR B or MVB limits, but that at this stage, when we're talking about standing, those potential gaps shouldn't preclude review, particularly given the fact...
So what test did you have us adopt that anytime the FDA requirements are close to the patent limitations, we should say there has to be standing?
Well, I don't know if it needs to be some sort of quantitative look at how close you get to the patent claims themselves, but, you know, looking at what the court said in Mayborn, if you're potentially infringing the patent in question, that should be enough. And we believe here that where you necessarily have to meet the ASR A and ASR C limits of WIESTA's claims in order to be FDA compliant. We have a process that absolutely exceeds 97% and per the patents, you know, could be beyond that.
Look at the chart on page 36 of the red brief. Help us here, because they admit that the ASR A and ASR C requirements are met, but they say that with respect to ASR B and MVB, there's a gap. And what's your answer to that?
And the answer there, Your Honor, is that while there may ultimately be a gap in terms of the ultimate infringement proof, that we do not believe there needs to be an admission of infringement in order to close that gap for the purposes of standing to get there.
Sure,
given
sure.
that all
of- That's true, but we're not talking about admitting infringement. We're talking about pointing out your process creates a risk that you would be sued for infringement. And you've discussed the 97% as being close to the 98%, but I'm asking about these other two items that apparently there's a gap. And what did your affiant say, if anything, about whether there was a likelihood that you would come close or exceed these other limitations?
Yes, Your Honor, and I do not believe that Mr. Newman in his declaration addressed quantitatively how close the process and number-wise gets to that gap. But
counsel,
again, I think...
Counsel,
yes.
This is Judge Moore. Judge Newman said that your products are made by particular patents. Those patents articulate a percentage of purity which exceeds the minimum required by the FDA. So didn't he, in fact, give testimony that suggests that your patents and the product it produces are not just at the bare minimum level required by the FDA, but in fact have a greater purity than what's required by the FDA?
And this is where there may be the ultimate disconnect between the patents and what Mr. Newman said in paragraph 20 of the declaration, appendix 6612 to 6613. That is certainly what the process can do according to that patent, and I just don't think the facts exactly are in the record in terms of what the ultimate API that, for instance, gets incorporated into Provay Blue, the product that's sold in the U.S., what that purity exactly looks like before it is incorporated into Provay Blue.
What do we do with the fact that obviously WIS has been aware of your activities for 10 years? You say you've been on the market for 3 years, and there's never been so much as a threat of an action against you.
And so here, I think you have to look at the totality of circumstances, and that while there hasn't been an explicit threat, I think it's certainly the circumstances here of tantamount to an overt threat, where the parties have engaged in numerous discussions and disputes over the past 10 years to resolve their underlying patent dispute. It got to the point where the parties were discussing licensing in order to obviate exactly what we're going through now and potential disputes in the future, and WISTA ceased all communication and stopped.
Well, that's after you threatened them, right?
There was indications that if there couldn't be certainty, so that there wouldn't be certainty around the methylene blue business, that ProPharm may have to file opposition proceedings.
But they offered you a non-assert.
They was not actually offered. It was suggested that would be their preferred path. ProPharm responded saying that they didn't believe that would be adequate. They wanted there were additional reasons why they thought a cross license would be better, and then that's when we stopped communications.
Counsel, I know your time is up, and hopefully Judge Dyke will be generous and restore a little rebuttal time since I'm using part of that time, but. This is Judge Moore. I have a question. And the question is, I'm not asking you to admit that the doctrine of equivalence could in fact apply here, because again, that would be like tantamount to admitting to asking you to admit infringement. So I'm not doing that. But isn't it possible that even your process requires you to be higher than 97%, which is in fact higher than the FDA guideline, and closer, therefore, to the minimum 98% threshold? Isn't it possible that, say, if you're at 97.6 or 97.7, that they could, if not a literal infringement claim, they could make a claim against you under the doctrine of equivalence? I mean, to your knowledge, have we ever said that for standing purposes you have to be within the range for literal infringement?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. I looked at a lot of of the recent standing cases in preparation for today's discussion, and I do not recall that, and that's certainly a possibility that WISTA could argue if they ultimately file a district court action.
But it's not a possibility that you've argued in this case, right?
It was not in the briefing, the doctrine of equivalence point. I do not believe so, Judge Dyke.
You argued, didn't you, that they could sue us for infringement, right?
Absolutely, and that's the basis of our standing argument, is that in view of the totality of the circumstances here, the threat of an infringement suit is absolutely a possibility, given the overlap between the FDA requirements and our patented process and our API manufacturing process.
Okay, unless my colleagues have further questions about standing, I think we'll give you a couple of minutes to discuss the merits.
Absolutely. Thank you, Your Honor. So turning to the merits, the first issue regarding the scope and content of the prior art, the point that I would like to make there is that the board collapsed its entire analysis into one perceived mistake in the petition, namely the board's determination that the European Pharmacopoeia's and Ackermann's disclosure of a methylene blue percentage did not refer to methylene blue purity. And while ProPharm does not challenge this finding, we believe that the real error is the fact that the board ignored the following evidence I'm about to summarize once they identified one error in the petition.
Are you saying that the actual level of purity of those prior art products was irrelevant to the obviousness theory that you asserted in your petition?
No, not that it was irrelevant, but that if there was one petition or position by ProPharm that the board ultimately disagreed with, that the analysis cannot stop there and they have to still consider the full petition and the evidence that was put in there and what the true scope and content of the prior art is. And we're certainly not asking the board to play archaeologist with the record here, but if you look at WISTA's patent itself, at Appendix 147, Table 3, it states that the starting purity of Medex methylene blue was 93.76% pure. And then, for example, if you look at Dean, which was the primary or reference that was used in every single ground of unpatentability, it reports that the purity of methylene blue is 95.4% pure. This was relied on in the petition at Appendix 216. And I would also refer the panel to Appendix 767, lines 8 to 15, where WISTA's counsel before the PTAB during argument agreed that 95.4% figure was a purity figure. So when we're talking about the purity of known methylene blue in the prior art, by the time we get to WISTA's patent in 2006, it is clear and undisputed that anywhere between 91% and ultimately up to 96%, which I am getting from Appendix 5756 to 5755, which was earlier WISTA testing associated with the UK patent application. That purity range was known in the prior art. The scope and content of the prior art was established, and then the only question became a reasonable expectation of success.
To that point, reasonable expectation of success, what was the board supposed to do with all the comments that you've made to patent offices around the world about methylene blue being so hard to purify? Should those have been ignored?
Yeah, I don't think those should have been ignored, but they needed to be taken in the proper context. And those statements were not made, and specifically, I believe Your Honor is referring to the 850 patent and the European equivalent of the 850 patent.
Yes.
And those statements were made in the context of ProPharm claims where not only did it recite a high level of organic impurity, but also a very low level of metallic or inorganic impurities, which is not the same case with the independent claims of WISTA's patent. And so those statements were directed at using conventional techniques to get rid of both at the same time, not that if we're simply looking at the independent claim, for example, and we want to purify via HPLC, preparatory HPLC, that is, would there be a reasonable expectation of success? And so in some regards, I think they were comparing apples to oranges because the claims and the technology was different enough that it would make a meaningful distinction to a person of ordinary skill.
Okay, I think we're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, and we'll hear from Mr. Speed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. Nathan Speed on behalf of the appellee, Wichita Laboratories. These appeals should be dismissed because the appellant Pruvapharm failed to demonstrate it has standing to bring them. If, however, the merits are considered, then this court should affirm because the record amply supports the board's factual determinations and the board committed no legal errors. I'll start with the standing issue.
Yeah, what more do you think that Pruvapharm had to allege to establish its standing?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think in light of the E.I. DuPont case, the case that Pruvapharm relies on heavily in its briefing, that type of allegation where in that case DuPont alleged that it had a plant that was operational and had the capability of manufacturing within the claimed parameters of the challenged patent, that type of evidence had, if it existed, if Pruvapharm had submitted that, then that might have been sufficient in light of DuPont to demonstrate standing.
So, counsel, this is Judge Moore. Under the DuPont case, if they had a plant and a process that was capable of infringing, that might be enough. Well, they expressly allege in their president, Mr. Newman's declaration, that they produced their product by virtue of the process in the 942 and 850 patents, and that that process, when you read the patent, produces a product that has greater than 97% purity, preferably greater than 98 or 99% purity. So why haven't they met the burden that they, in fact, do have the capability of producing an infringing product by virtue of the process they're using, since that is, in fact, the preferred embodiment in the patent disclosed that they say they're actually using to produce their product?
Thank you, Your Honor. A handful of responses there. One, I believe opposing counsel admitted that there is no connection necessarily between how Pruvablu is actually manufactured in the real world and how in the preferred embodiments of the patents. But more to the point, the patents that are referenced in paragraph 20 of Mr. Newman's declaration relate just to the purity level of methylene blue, but they don't discuss the organic impurities, AZB, AHC, and MVB, that are recited in the WISTA claims. So the WISTA claims are not just focused on the purity level of methylene blue. It's the purity level of methylene blue along with specific purity levels for other organic purities. And most notably, the WISTA claims require less than 1% of AZB, whereas the FDA permits Pruvablu to include 2.5 times as much of that impurity AZB. And so that gap there between the WISTA claims and the FDA requirements for Pruvablu is a sufficient gap to make it an unreasonable allegation of infringement based on the record that we have here.
Is the difference between 1% and 2.5%, is that meaningful in the art?
I think we can take Pruvapharm's own statements to the U.S. Patent Office and the European Patent Office as to the difficulties associated with using conventional techniques to purify methylene blue and separate it from or purify it from its organic impurities such as AZB, AZA, and AZC. Indeed, to the European Office, they told the European Office that it was impossible using conventional processes to do that.
What would you have them say that they are capable of doing all of that? Is that what they would have to say?
I think going to this court's opinion in the JTEKT Corporation decision, they don't need to concede current infringement, but they do need to establish, quote, that it has concrete plans for future activity that creates a substantial risk of future infringement or likely cause the patentee to assert a claim of infringement. And so here, had they submitted a declaration that said that they have a plant that is currently capable of producing Pruvablu within the various ranges of the claims of the WISTA patents, that might have been sufficient. And I think it's important to remember that the burden is on ProverFarm to demonstrate on appeal that it has standing to seek reversal of the board's decisions. And they have all the information in their possession. So they either don't actually have the capability to meet the limitations recited in the WISTA patents, or they've made the strategic decision not to introduce the evidence that would establish that. And respectfully, we believe that they should be held to the consequence of that strategic decision, which would be that the appeals are dismissed for lack of standing.
Counsel, you suggested that one of the problems with their proof is that, for example, when it comes to Azer-B, one of the organic materials, the claims require it to be at 1% or less. Is that right?
Correct.
And that they haven't specifically alleged or provided proof that their product is at or less than 1%? Is that the nature of the argument? I'm just making sure I understand it.
Correct. The paragraph 20 of the Newman Declaration just focuses on the methylene blue purity level.
Right, but the patent, that the two patents that paragraph 20 expressly relies on, says the most preferred embodiment has a 99% or a greater than 99% purity of meth blue. So if the meth blue has to be greater than 99%, doesn't that necessarily exclude 1% or more of Azor B being included? I mean, I can count the percents, and they got to add up to 100.
That would be correct, Your Honor, if we had any evidence in the record that ProverFarm was manufacturing ProverBlue using that preferred embodiment. We don't. If that was true, it would seem that ProverFarm could have added a paragraph to Dr. Newman's declaration to expressly state as much. And then we wouldn't be in the situation debating about speculating as to what type of process they're using. This is information.
No, please continue.
I was just trying to establish that this is information entirely within their control, and they chose strategically to only cite to a patent and suggest that their process is based on that patent without explaining which of the embodiments.
So I have two problems with what you're saying. Before you said the standard is they have to be capable. Now you're requiring proof that they do, in fact. And so I feel like you've raised the level of proof in response to my very specific question. So that's kind of point number one. But point number two that I'd like to raise with you is paragraph 20 expressly says that they're preparing proof of blue, or however you call it, based on the process for preparing methylene blue described in the 942 patent, and then the compound is claimed in the 850 patent. And that patent expressly says that the most preferred embodiment is the 99% or greater purity. So if they're using a process that they have described in detail in a patent as capable of producing meth blue at greater than 99% purity, why isn't that enough? You said the standard was capable of. They said, this is the process we're using. Here's the patent. And the patent describes the preferred embodiment as producing greater than 99% purity.
I think, Your Honor, the fact that they haven't alleged that they're actually using that preferred embodiment would be...
No, but you didn't say, counsel, you didn't say they have to allege that they're using that preferred embodiment. You said our standard, which you were right about, is they're capable of doing it.
They are, you're right. So they're capable in the sense of having provided it in their patent specification, but whether or not they're actually commercially capable of doing it, that's the missing link here. We don't know if they're actually capable of achieving those purity levels.
Capable can't be the only test. There has to be some plan to do something which might infringe. I mean, anybody could be capable of doing something. That seems to me perhaps not enough to give you standing.
I would agree, Your Honor. In this case, just simply by describing...
I would assume you would agree. There was no actual question in there. But let's go back to something else. why do you think they would spend 10 years negotiating with you over this if they weren't planning to or didn't have the capacity to infringe? Why would you bother spending, if you're really, really close, because they are really, really close at a minimum to the bottom threshold, because they're using a process which requires the production to be over 97%. And then their preferred embodiment requires it over 99%. So just out of curiosity, what do you think would motivate a company to spend 10 years negotiating for a patent license if they weren't capable of infringing?
Your Honor, I would push back on the idea that there's been 10 years of negotiation. They approached WISTA in 2010 and 2011, which would have been 6 years before the first WISTA patent even issued. And they wanted to enter into a business agreement and prove a firm, and WISTA never reached that agreement. And then they had no further communications for 4 years, from 2011 to 2015, when at that point, Proof of Farm again approached WISTA, and the parties had some initial discussions during which Proof of Farm sent their draft cross-license. And when WISTA said that they weren't interested in the draft cross-license, Proof of Farm's response was to threaten WISTA to encourage them forcefully to enter into the business deal. And WISTA broke off conversation at that point because they had been threatened, and then we had these IPRs that were filed. So there hasn't been a decade's worth of discussions between the parties where these patents were of critical importance. This has been a story in which Proof of Farm has twice reached out to WISTA to try to get us to enter into a business deal with them, and we said no, and their response was to challenge our patents before the PTAB.
All right. Unless there are further questions about standing, perhaps you could take a couple minutes to address the merits.
Yes, Your Honor. As the board summarized at pages 19 to 20 of its decision, Proof of Farm's petitions were based on two factual pillars. Proof of Farm first alleged that high purity methylene blue with greater than 98% purity was already known and commercially available as a prior art. And second, that starting with such a high-purity composition, Opposo would have had a reasonable expectation of success in using conventional HPLC to purify the composition well beyond the claimed ranges. As the board noted, Proof of Farm alleged there would be, quote, nothing challenging with using HPLC to purify methylene blue. The board correctly found that Proof of Farm's arguments suffered from two fundamental and independently dispositive factual flaws. First, from pages 20 to 32, the board explained that Proof of Farm had failed to prove the scope and content of the prior art as alleged in the petition. While Proof of Farm cited several references in its petition that disclosed percentages of 98% or greater, the board found after a detailed assessment of the record that none, not a single one of the percentages actually cited in the petition, evidenced the existence of high purity methylene blue. They didn't refer to purity. The board's analysis.
What is your response to their argument, though, even though that might be the case, the board still should have analyzed all of the prior art cited for purposes of deciding what it did disclose, even if it didn't disclose exactly what the petition said it did?
The response there would be that within the IPR process, the petitioner has complete control of the petition, and they're bound to the arguments that they actually set forth in the petition. And there was no distinct argument set forth in their petition that Opposa, rather than starting with high purity methylene blue, would have started with methylene blue of any known purity, and therefore achieved the purity limitations recited in the WISTA claims. Indeed, page appendix 217, when describing the Dean reference that counsel for Approval Farm mentioned in his opening argument, they described Dean's 95.4% pure methylene blue, which would be a specific purity level that was identified in the petition. They described it as a disadvantageous starting point, and then explained that, quote, commercial methylene blue was cheaply available by the time of the invention at 97 to 99% purity, meaning that purification would have been even easier than at the time of Dean. And so they clearly premised their entire petition, the scope and content of the prior art, on the existence of high purity methylene blue. And the contention now that on appeal that they had a more generic argument that was based on simply any specific purity level being known in the art just doesn't match with what the petition actually said. Indeed, there's a section in the petition called Content and Scope of the Prior Art in which they have on Appendix 225, they explicitly say high purity methylene blue compositions were known. They talk about those compositions comprising greater than 98%. They then cite four exhibits, each of which has a percentage that's quoted that's 98 to 103%. And they conclude that that is, quote, methylene blue compositions comprising 98% or more were commonly known and suggested in the art. So that was their petition. They had complete control of the arguments that they were going to submit in that petition. And they defined the prior art as having high purity of 98% or more.
Okay, but let's assume that they had a starting point around 94%. Something like that. Let's assume they just hypothetically that they had that. Isn't there a problem with the HPLC getting you to 98%?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the second basis that the board identified in its decision, which was that they failed to prove that conventional HPLC would have allowed you to go from a 94% purity to the claim purity levels recited with this claims.
And my understanding is that they're claiming that the analytic HPLC would allow you to detect 98% purity. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is the how the board and our expert explained analytical HPLC, which was the basis or was the is what the dean referenced as the basis of their two grounds. Dean disclosed an analytical process. So in Proof of Harm's petition, they pointed to the fractions that are depicted in Dean's figures 6A to 6H and figure 8G and conclusively stated that those were purified components of methylene blue. But in reality, as our expert explained and the board agreed, the fractions actually contain methylene blue combined with and allulate having significantly greater amounts of glycine and other impurities than methylene blue. That's the board quoting our expert at page 40 of its decision. So they focused their petition on references that just disclosed an analytical HPLC process and didn't explain how you would go from observing methylene blue on fractions from an analytical process to actually obtaining isolated pure methylene blue. And on page 41, they cited to Dr. Sessler, which is this expert, who explained that that process going from the fractions in a chromatogram to actually obtaining a pure methylene blue was exceptionally difficult, perhaps chemically impossible. And that's paragraph 134 of his declaration, which they cited at page 41. And that statement from our expert is completely consistent with the position that Proof of Harm took before the U.S. Patent Office, where they said that in 2006, then-existing purification techniques inevitably produced impurities, and the position that they took repeatedly in front of the European office, in which they said that then-existing conventional techniques, such as HPLC, made it difficult or impossible to actually separate methylene blue or isolate methylene blue from its organic impurities.
Okay. Unless there are further questions, I think we're out of time. Hearing none, Mr. Ricciuti, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge Dyke. And I would like to make 2 points on the merits with the remaining time that I have. The first regarding the scope and content of the prior art and starting methylene blue purity. If you look at Appendix 31, which is the board's final written decision, which quotes directly from Proof Farm's petition at Appendix 239 to 240, the board summarized our position regarding the scope and content as following. And that an ordinary skilled artisan would have conducted routine experimentation starting with a methylene blue composition such as 95% methylene blue or 99% methylene blue and ultimately arrived at the recited at least 98% methylene blue using HPLC. That 95% methylene blue is deemed that's disclosed in the prior art, and this goes to the board finding what they believe would be one mistake as a higher percentage, 99% being disclosed, and then they stopped their analysis there. They recognized that we said there were lower purities that could be further purified, such as 95%, and that's Dean, and then it gets us to the reasonable expectation of success analysis. And this is where the board just didn't understand and appreciate ProPharm's argument and the distinction between analytical HPLC and preparatory HPLC. And you can see this clearly at Appendix 40, where the board states that it credited and agreed with Dr. Sesler's testimony that analytical HPLC process disclosed in Dean would have produced an elutin with impurities other than methylene blue. But ProPharm never argued otherwise, and importantly, we've never argued that the exact analytical HPLC processes that are disclosed in Dean would have to be bodily incorporated into the obviousness combination, into the hypothetical HPLC protocol to get to successful isolation. What ProPharm said was that HPLC is common in the art. In preparatory HPLC, the whole goal is to isolate the methylene, what you are separating out of the HPLC column so that you can then use it. And with that goal in mind, a person of ordinary skill would have selected an appropriate mobile phase that would have allowed for successful isolation after separation and purification. When that was rebutted in the patent owner response by them, by Wiesta saying, well, no, you need to be stuck with exactly what's in Dean, ProPharm's expert said, okay, even if the obviousness analysis required that type of plug-and-chug bodily incorporation, which it doesn't, all you would have to do is look at Dean's Figure 1. Dean's Figure 1 is a completely volatile mobile phase, so that when the solvent, when the thing that comes out of the HPLC column evaporates, you're going to be left with your purified and isolated high-purity methylene blue. That
okay,
argument...
Mr. Roche, I think we're out.
Apologies, Your Honor, and thank you. And so we would ask that the cases be remanded so the board can consider the reasonable expectation of success analysis in view of the full body of prior art. And thank you very much for the indulgence on extra time this morning.
Okay. We thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.